Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on 3rd and short.
Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Welcome inside Patriots Playbook. It's Wednesday here on Patriots.com Radio. It's Wednesday, but we'll kind of sort of treat it as Tuesday because I know you've got things to nitpick, right? I put this up on Facebook earlier today, and I have to admit, I'm having a little trouble coming up with things to nitpick from Monday night because Monday night was about as complete and total a dismantling of a team in the NFL as I've seen in quite some time. Eric Scalavino, PFW, going to hang with us here. We're actually going to...
What up, JR?
I got a question for you in just a moment, but I do want to let everybody know that today it's a little bit of an abbreviated show only because I've got a basketball game that I got to get up to in Boston tonight, so I have to leave the friendly confines of the basement of the Fortress of Solitude here.
Who do you got,
a little
John,
early.
Tonight?
It's Providence at Boston College.
Oh, an old-time Big East rivalry.
An old-school Big East rivalry tonight. Yeah, I know.
I miss it a lot. So you're going up to... The Heights or is
Conti
it
Forum.
Conti Forum, huh?
Yes. Have to jump into traffic because, as you well know, on 128, it gets brutal at about 3:30. Mm-hmm. So that's why we're jumping into it. So, all right, let me get back to Monday night just because I watched with amazement and I really wasn't sure what I was watching. So after a couple of days now, having to try to give this a little thought, and I've said this to you many times. This is one of the things I love about, you know, coming on basically 48 hours after the end of a game to start a show because we get a chance to, you know, let a little hindsight sink in here. It has dawned on me, and I've never thought of them this way at all at any point in this season. But we have a Super Bowl contender here. I've never thought of this team as a true Super Bowl contender.
Until now?
Until now.
I started thinking it about a month ago.
Really?
Yeah. Mr. Naysayer?
You? Mr. Naysayer?
I put it in print, John. It was in my commentary because I explained that...
I must have missed that.
The way the season has been going with all these other teams not living up to their potential in many cases and other teams coming out of nowhere like the Chiefs and the Buccaneers. And
Yeah.
It's been a bizarre season that... A team like the Patriots is certainly in the mix. I started thinking that, you know, I thought it was an accident when they went down to Miami and blew them out. You know, but then.
I like that.
The Charger game, when the Chargers literally handed the ball to them, handed the game to them.
Yeah.
All these things started happening, and that's when I started saying, oh, you know what? There might be something about this season. And now it's just getting confirmed each and every week. We're seeing progress from both sides of the ball, particularly on defense. The offense is clicking at levels like that are 2007-like almost, in a different way, a different type of offense, but they're clicking like we haven't seen them in a while. They seem to be on a mission.
Well, I would argue here that maybe the reason the Patriots now are a Super Bowl contender after 13 weeks, and it's taken me all of 13 weeks to realize that we actually have something like that here in New England this season. But I would argue that it's taken me a while to get to this point because there just isn't really what I would call a dominating team in the NFL. Now, I don't know if that's part of my point.
Yeah,
I don't know if this is parity. I don't know if this is because we're in the uncapped salary cap year, and so there's more parity than ever before. I don't know if this is cyclical, but the Patriots have put themselves in position to take advantage of what the marketplace has let them do.
Yeah,
really?
I think all of those factors come into play, John. It's been a bizarre year from the beginning, just because, like you said, starting with the uncapped year and the threat of this being the last season of football as we know it for a while, the threat of the lockout. There's all this looming uncertainty, and it's just been one of those inexplicably weird years where all these things that you couldn't possibly make up are happening, and the Patriots' resurgence is, I think, part of that.
Yeah, Well, if you have, well, I'm going to expand on that in just a second, but right now I just want to make sure that if you've got nitpicks, and I've got two or three here that I am going to share with you, but if you have nitpicks from Monday night's game, fire them off right now, webradio@patriots.com. You can also post them up on Facebook or chat them up on Facebook. The phone number, of course, Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-543-7482, and we'll get right to them because, again, a little bit of an abbreviated show today, and then we'll jump into all things Chicago for the most part in tomorrow's program. But I have to admit, this is something that, and maybe there are many of our listeners are, and many of, you know, the readers of PFW and such that have, you know, followed all through season and thought that, well, you know what, we're not that far away. Maybe we are, but we're on the outside looking in, and because of the Jets loss, I guess maybe because I've always thought of the Jets having been above the Patriots simply because I try to base my opinions on head-to-head combat, you know? Mm-hmm. And because the Jets had beat the Patriots way back in Week 2, and I realized both teams are different, and that's what happens over the course of a 16-week season. Teams do morph. Mm-hmm. Teams do change.
Hopefully for
the better. But now, more so than ever, I think we've seen this year as a perfect example of Bill Belichick's system of starting at one level and then gradually improving and increasing tempo and maybe putting more into the playbook and expecting guys to know more. Whereas the Jets, you know, they came smoking out of the gate. You know, they were coming smoking out of the stinking, you know, TV show you know, on HBO. Yeah, the Hard Knocks show. And I mean, and they were the best team in football in the opening 3-4 weeks of the season. Mm-hmm. In spite of that loss, I think, in Week 1 mm-hmm. to Baltimore, I think they were still the best team in football.
Yeah.
But now, we've seen what pacing can do.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen what, you know, planning can do, and we've seen what contemplating can do.
Stick-to-itiveness, belief in the system,
and knowing especially that you had a young defense this year. It was an athletic defense, and we're seeing that it's an athletic defense. It's definitely younger. It's definitely faster. It's definitely quicker to the ball than what we were a year or 2 years ago, mm-hmm. or I would even argue probably even since 2007. But fact is that it's not experienced. It's not quite as shall we say, stiff.
Mm-hmm.
It's not quite as relentless, but it's coming. We're still seeing gradual improvements every step of the way.
We're seeing improvement game to game.
Exactly.
Half to half, almost.
Which you have to admit now. You've covered, you know, this team, and you've covered pro football for a few years now, so you have to admit, that's really unusual to find.
Exactly. It just it continues that streak of weird things happening. You don't expect that to happen, or you don't expect it to happen that quickly. You know, within the confines of a season, you don't expect to see that type of dramatic improvement.
Right.
You hope, like we said earlier, you hope that happens, that the players buy into the system, that they do what they're told, that they recognize mistakes, they learn from them, so forth. But they're actually doing it, which is very encouraging. And on offense, this is a completely different type of offense than they started the season with. And as weird as it sounds, getting rid of Moss may have been the best thing that they've done.
That was the next thing I'm bringing up. Say, you know, great minds think alike here. You know, clearly, while we've seen the defense improve, the offense obviously has also undergone its own transformation. And I think we realized, and more importantly, Bill Belichick and Bill O'Brien realized, that when Randy started to get a little antsy, and maybe Tom was throwing the ball downfield a little bit more than he should have in order to appease Randy, and I've heard this debated on, you know, local sports talk radio up here for the better part of the last week now. And frankly, there's certainly some merit to it. And I thought there was some merit to this a couple of weeks ago. And now I'm absolutely sure there's merit to it. Fact remains is that they said, look, you know what? This team is not built right now for Randy Moss. Whereas in 2007, you know, we had a team that could go down the field. This team is probably built differently.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have even the same Wes Welker as we had 2 years ago or a year ago because, you know, we have Wes post knee injury now. We have
Well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to step.
No. You're absolutely right. You're going where I'm going with this. He's not really back to the Wes Welker we had 3 years ago.
But he's not that bad either.
No, he's not bad, but he's still not the same. He himself has said, I'm still not entirely confident of my leg in order to cut on it freely.
However, he's shed the brace. I don't know if you noticed.
I did notice it this last week the first time, and I was going to ask you about
which
that.
Which I think means to me that psychologically he's over it.
Well, that's huge.
Yeah.
That's even bigger, which tells me that there could be mentally here bigger things still to come for this offense, which is something to get excited about. Now,
and finally, just real quick, finally, there are fewer and fewer, almost no questions to him about the knee anymore. It used to be the weekly thing. How's the knee? How are you feeling? How did this and that? People aren't even thinking about
it
anymore.
Well, maybe he took off the brace so that would stop.
No, I think it started stopping. If that makes sense. And then he took off the brace.
Okay. All right.
But anyway,
this team is becoming not an issue anymore. Some of the wideouts that we have, they're younger guys, the guys that need to develop. And I think, you know, the Patriots' way of developing these guys is to make sure that they're involved in the passing game and not have a potentially negative influence involved with them in the receiving corps. And that's what helped make Randy expendable.
Right.
That, when you couple the fact that you bring in Deion Branch, who is the ultimate team guy. I mean, he's Troy Brown all over again, as far as I'm concerned. With, you know, minus the willingness to go play defense.
A little bit quicker than Troy Brown.
Yes, quicker than Troy Brown.
Even with the hamstring. But
I'm talking about his willingness to go out there and do whatever that needs to be done. Tom has had a great relationship with him in the past. Obviously, he's a former Super Bowl MVP himself, and they thought that bringing him back would be the right place at the right time to get back to the things that we need to do to continue to grow this team, and this team has done that. And when the trade was made, Moss away, Branch in, the growth continued exponentially.
And we saw Monday night, John, how the difference in the two games, when they had Moss in week two and when they didn't, affected how the Jets attacked New England defensively. Revis was on Moss in week two exclusively. We saw that. You know, Moss had his catches. He had that ridiculous one-handed touchdown. But for the most part, conventional wisdom, I think, would tell you Revis had the better of him that day. Right?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree.
Revis lined up to start the game. Revis lined up on Brandon Tate. Then he went to Wes Welker. Then a few times he shifted off and went to Branch. And he was sort of, I'd say predominantly, he was on Welker most of the night. Mm-hmm. But they moved him around. They couldn't get a bead on anybody with him. He couldn't get a bead on any one particular player. That's the difference in the offense. Whereas there isn't the one guy you can focus on, take away, and just exclude. So your best cornerback, they didn't really throw to him all night, but that's more a combination of the Patriots' offense being a read and react offense.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There is no intended receiver on any play that the Patriots run. The receivers have routes that are based on what the defense gives them, and whichever guy gets open first is the read that Brady makes. There is never an intended receiver unless it's like a flea flicker or something specifically designed for one receiver who's downfield.
Yeah,
and they rarely do that. So the difference in how the Jets could attack, they couldn't send Revis on one guy and say, just take him away. And that's they didn't. They moved him around based on the formations and the looks that New England put out there. So that's not what and they brought their pressure, as they always do, but New England was much better at picking it up this time than they were in week two.
Mm-hmm.
I think in part because they had more weapons that they could comfortably go to. So the difference was striking, and my God, 42-point differential. Supposedly the best defense in the league.
Just a remarkable performance all the way around, which is why I thought it would be kind of tough coming up with nitpicks. But you know what? Hey, leave it to our Patriots
fans. I'll give you a couple.
Well, all right, go ahead. We'll let you start off, but I've got three or four already posted here. And that's what I love about Patriots fans. See, I don't think that our fans who listen to this show, I think our fans who listen to this show are very knowledgeable, which is why I love doing this on Tuesday/Wednesday today, because no matter what the silver lining is, we always manage to find the gray streak in the dark clouds.
You have to be realistic about things.
That's very true.
So my nitpicks would be kickoffs.
Yeah.
Kickoff coverage, not very good.
You stole mine, kickoff coverage. Yeah. That was the one that I came up with. Now, I was not going to call kickoffs a nitpick because I realized that Shane Graham is not Steven Gostkowski.
No.
Okay? He's not. He's a wonderful replacement considering what we might have had.
Yep.
I think that Shane Graham is great, and so I am
as
not going to count that against him.
Yeah, as a
field
goal
kicker,
yes.
Right.
The kickoff coverage is affected a lot by the kickoffs.
That's a nitpick.
The two are related. They're inextricably linked.
That's a nitpick.
The return men for the Jets were getting the ball anywhere from the 5 to the 20 most of the night is troubling. Right. And it's going to be troubling this week against a guy like Devin Hester, who they're going to look at the film. They're going to know that the kickoffs are going to be a lot shorter. It's going to be freezing cold, which is going to make the ball harder, which is going to make the kickoffs even that much shorter. There's going to be wind significantly, probably, that would affect things. So you could see Devin Hester lining up at the 10 and moving up to the 20 or the 25 all night. And that's going to be a danger.
Well, anytime, I think, you know, as a general rule, you've got to hold teams to the 30-yard line and in. I think if you can hold teams around the 30-yard line.
Like 27, I think, is about the NFL
so
average.
So that's why I'm saying you've got to hold them to the 30-yard line. I think that's an allowable statistic. Anything across the 30-yard line, you just have not done your job.
Right, and if you're kicking off to the 15 or the 20, chances are you're going to get past the
guy's going to get 30. An average return of 20 to 25 yards. Right. You're up at the 40-yard line.
Right. Now, the only hope is.
You can't let that happen.
The only hope sometimes is that they intentionally kick it high and short, and that gets the coverage guys down there. So wherever it's basically like a fair catch kind of
thing.
That's
right.
That's your hope, but they didn't do that against the Jets Monday night.
Okay. Well, that's very true. All right, so there's a nitpick that you and I share. Now, I'm going to balance it out, as I always try to do on Nitpick Tuesday, and again being Nitpick Wednesday today. You know, the obvious one, I think, was the fact that, you know, Brady has won 26 consecutive games at home, but that wasn't what I was going to use here. What I'm going to use here is, again, I'm trying to find some things that you might not have known or certainly weren't obvious. The Patriots' 42-point win over the Jets ties the fifth largest margin of victory in team history.
Hmm. And the largest was against the Jets as well, right?
Well, the only victories in team history that were by larger were the 59-0 win over Tennessee last year. 56-3.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
That's right. That's the largest margin in team history. 56-3 over the Jets in 1979. 56-10 at Buffalo in 2007. Mm-hmm. Remember that one?
Yeah, oh yeah.
And 52-7 over Washington in
07. Yeah.
That was a part of that 07 juggernaut offense.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So this is fifth. Tied for fifth largest margin of victory
against,
in team history.
I say it again, against what's supposedly the best defense in the league.
That's right. That's right. Strippers, nitpicks. He says, Roddy White nitpicks of the game during the fourth quarter. The Pats are embarrassing the Jets on purpose. Why are the Pats still passing the ball? Our last scoring drive with 9 minutes left in the game. I can't believe Bill Belichick is doing the Jets like this. I want to hear what Rex has got to say about it. And then he goes on to say, he says, I got some breaking news for you. Urban Meyer is stepping down at Florida.
Again?
And that is true. Yeah.
For real this time?
Yeah. I'm just looking at it right now on ESPN on the monitor. It says Urban Meyer steps down as Florida coach.
Effective after the bowl?
Apparently after the bowl game. That's what I'm guessing. But just says that he's stepping down. I don't know if the bowl game is even in the discussion right now.
They didn't have that very good
Urban
a year.
Meyer.
They didn't have that very good a year.
Urban Meyer, he might be the next head coach at Denver.
Ooh. Interesting.
What do you think about that?
Interesting. Yeah, it doesn't say why he's stepping down, does it?
No, it does not. Just says he's stepping down.
That's curious. That's curious.
Well, I mean, you know, here's a guy that basically stepped down a year ago because he was having heart palpitations, right?
Mm. Well, what did he step down for? 2 days? And then he was back on the job?
Well, not really. He just sort of recanted, and they said he was taking a leave of absence.
Which he
to
didn't
get
do.
Again.
But
well,
he didn't even do it.
Not really. I guess they've got him on new meds or something. I don't know.
Yeah, he did.
But he wants to step from the college game into the pros, thinking that's going to be more relaxing?
Oh, God. Yeah, ask the old ball coach down in South Carolina how that worked out.
Well, now, here's the funny thing. Why wouldn't it possibly fit in Denver since he's got Tim Tebow there?
Well, that's a good point, but does he really think an NFL offense is going to revolve around Tim Tebow?
I don't know.
It was great in the SEC.
I don't know. I'm starting speculation early, kind of on my own here.
Oh, that's curious.
But thank you, Strippers, for sending the breaking news down.
Wow.
So Urban Meyer is stepping down as Florida head coach, 64-15 in 6 seasons and 2 national championships. I mean, I guess I realize that Florida was only 7-5 this last year.
Well, for them, you know, that's a bad year.
That's a bad year. But you know what? He pretty much has done all you can do there, except win another national title.
Well, he won. How many did he win? Two? Three?
Two.
Right? Yeah.
Won two.
That's better than Spurrier did, right?
Yeah, I know. That's exactly right. All right. Wow. So, all right, that's the breaking news. Thanks, Trippers. All right, let me get one more in here, and then we'll take a break in a couple of minutes here. Again, webradio@patriots.com is our email address, as you always know. Looking for nitpicks for Monday night. We came up with a really good one. Kick coverage, I think, is an excellent nitpick. It obviously has to improve, especially when you have Devin Hester and the Chicago Bears on the horizon this Sunday. Tim sends this one. He says, Danny Woodhead is the ultimate team player right now. He's a pivotal part of our offense, and he is still willing to not only participate but make plays on special teams. I would also put my money on if Bill needed him to, he would be willing to go in on defense as an emergency corner. Doesn't sound like a nitpick, but it sounds like a blanket statement. What do you think about having him be an all-purpose kind of guy like Troy Brown was at one time?
I'd rather just leave him where he is right now. I don't want to. I don't want to overextend the guy. People had been wondering, what are we going to do when Kevin Faulk leaves? We have our answer now. And Kevin Faulk hasn't been asked to play defense. I know he would if he was asked to, probably like Troy Brown did, but he has a role that he fulfills, and he's done it exceptionally well since he's gotten here, after the season started, missing all the training camp and everything. I think that's a godsend for this team. People were wondering, where's the new Kevin Faulk going to come from? Well, he's here, and he's doing a great job at it. And you could even argue he's quicker. We'll see if he has the type of, because let's not forget, Faulk wasn't always the sure-handed, reliable go-to guy that he's become. His biggest problem when he was a young player was fumbling the ball in key situations.
Right.
He had the dropsies, and he overcame that and became a go-to guy for this team.
Right.
Woodhead, at this point in his career, Woodhead is a more reliable player than Faulk was at this point.
Tim just hit me back up on Facebook chat. He says, what are we going to do when Faulk comes back?
If Faulk comes back.
Do you think that's still an if?
Sure.
You don't really feel like he
wants to try to go out
on his own terms?
I don't think it's 100% guarantee that he comes back. Is it more 50-50, 60-40?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, probably, but I wouldn't say it's a surefire thing.
Interesting. I kind of still feel like, based on what he said right after the injury, that, you know, his rehab will probably be such where he wants to get him back, at least himself back in physical shape, at least to be able to make an educated decision as to whether or not it's in his best interest.
Mm-hmm. So it's
kind of like the same way I felt about Welker, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he wants to get himself back healthy and test it,
right,
and then see if he can still play.
Right.
And then the decision will be made, mm-hmm. which probably won't come then until
the off season.
Well, until probably OTAs, right?
Yeah, springtime.
Yeah, late spring.
Yeah,
probably even after the draft.
Maybe even after that, John.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Maybe even get into training camp.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's fair. Paul says, John, how's it going? How on earth do you nitpick a pretty much perfect performance?
You have to.
We punted a couple of times.
Bill does.
And the short kickoff sucked, but apart from that, it was absolutely outstanding by the team from beginning to end. There's a lot of football to be played and many twists in the road before it gets anywhere. And then he goes on to say, gets anywhere near Dallas in February, but we're looking good, and if anybody can keep this team looking one game at a time, it's Bill. That's actually an appropriate point, and I think you're right. Bill does. He nitpicks all the time. You think sometimes you think we stretch it here by nitpick on the show. What do you think Bill and the coaching staff are doing during film session?
Of course. That's how you keep the team focused.
That's exactly
right.
Yeah,
you guys won by 42, but.
Here you go.
Yeah.
And
this, and oh, by the way, this week you have so-and-so, this and that.
Right.
That's how you got to do it.
Right.
It's not the last game of the year. Where you can, you know, if this was the Super Bowl and they had some mistakes, but they still won, then you can say, whatever. The season's over. You accomplished the goal.
Right.
But it's not. You still have, potentially 7 games left. So.
Yeah, a lot. All right, I'm going to match that one then with my conglomeration of Brady accomplishments. This is all going in as one. First of all, Tom, second straight week he's been the AFC Offensive Player of the Week. Okay. So that just came out today in case you hadn't heard.
Yep.
You guys probably even talked about it. All right, here we go. But here's just this is just a list now of all the things that Tom did based on Monday night's win. 25 touchdown passes for the 6th time in his career. Extended his record for most consecutive pass attempts without a pick. It's now at 228 consecutive attempts without a pick.
Yeah, crazy.
Team record, 7th straight start without a pick. He's thrown at least one touchdown pass in all 12 games. Back-to-back 4 touchdown games. One of just 14 NFL players to reach 250 career touchdowns thrown. And he moves up on the all-time touchdown list with 252 passing.
Drew Bledsoe.
Yes, sir. Very good. How do you like that?
It was quite a game. It's quite a game for him.
And that's all he did. That's all he did.
Yep.
All right, let's take a timeout here.
All right.
Webradio at patriots.com. The Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-543-7482. Hit me up on Facebook as well, on Facebook chat, as we nitpick somehow, some way, our way through a 45-3 win over the Jets on Monday night here in the Playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome on the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network. All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst. Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com. Radio.
So, Pat, how many Advantage miles have you racked up on American Airlines this year?
That's kind of a personal question, Brian.
It's nothing to be embarrassed about.
I'm not embarrassed.
Oh, okay, then I'll ask you again. How many miles have you racked up?
236,000.
Miles? That's got to be wrong, because I fly a lot more than you.
Well, flying isn't the only way you can earn Advantage miles, Brian.
Right. I knew that.
I mean, you can earn miles when you buy all kinds of stuff, you know? Stuff you use every day.
Also, like, you know, ping pong balls, Argyle socks, really tall ladders.
Like clothes, you know, movie rentals, gas for your car.
Oh, shish kebabs, Russian nesting dolls, snow globes.
I was thinking, like, newspapers, you know? When you bank, go to restaurants.
Oh, fake mustaches.
Yeah, Brian. You can earn miles when you go to a novelty store and buy a fake mustache.
Awesome.
You can earn Advantage miles for the stuff you buy every day, whatever that stuff may be. Learn more at aa.com/advantage. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
You may know that Verizon Fios has more HD channels than cable, but what you may not know is that now you can sign up for Verizon Fios with no term contract required. And if you're not absolutely satisfied, you can cancel with no early termination fees. That's right. You can get Fios TV, internet, and phone at a guaranteed low price of just $89.99 a month for a year with no term contract required. And if you don't love it, you can cancel with no early termination fees. Just call 1-866-892-6057. That's 1-866-892-6057, and you'll know why now is the best time to switch to Fios. Get your game face on. Play the Gridiron Challenge at patriots.com/gridironchallenge and enter for your chance to win tickets and a chance to win the grand prize, an all-inclusive trip to the big game. Brought to you by Verizon. For official rules and terms, visit patriots.com/gridironchallenge. For new customers only, equipment charges, taxes, and fees, and other terms apply. Rate may increase after 1 year. Fios services available in select areas. Offer expires 9/18/10. Call for more details.
Okay, I'll have the Giganto Burger with Cheese Combo.
Oh, will that be all?
That's it.
Go, Pats!
What?
If you're like this man, you have what is known as a healthy obsession with the Patriots.
Hi, just the jeans today?
Yeah, thanks.
Go, Pats!
Okay, that was weird.
I know, right?
At Bank of America, we understand, and we can help.
I'll just take this with you already.
Oh, here you go.
Go, Pats!
Indeed, go, Pats.
With Patriots checking from Bank of America, you can do more than just tell the world about your loyalty. You can show them by getting the Patriots logo on your checks and debit card.
I say, here's a baguette. Go long.
I'm open!
Whoops.
Ask your Bank of America associate if Patriots checking is right for you. Or go to bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. Copyright 2010 Bank of America Corporation. And account setup fee may apply in some states.
Now's your chance to hit up John Rook inside the Playbook on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-543-7482.
or via email, webradio@patriots.com. Facebook page, if you're not on Facebook, well, then you can find me on Facebook, John Rook. R-O-O-K-E is the last name. Send a friend request and we'll hook you up. And then you can either post right on the Facebook page or you can do it via chat, because I'm usually always logged in during the program. 508-543-7482. That's the Ace Ticket Hotline as well. Let's see.
Want
John
some,
Rook, Eric Scalavino. Yes, sir.
You want some news from practice, John?
Yes, please. I think that'd be a great idea. And then I'm going to update you on Urban Meyer in case you don't have it handy. But, yeah, what's the practice today? I know that Dan Copen was missing.
Well, yeah, from the start. And I will emphasize that without going into further detail.
All right.
He was absent from the start of practice. I editorializing a little bit, I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up being limited in the practice report.
Okay.
Just a little thing to tuck in the back of your mind there.
You think that that's more of a maintenance issue, or did he really take a ding on Monday night?
Let's just say I don't want to say too much. Let's just.
So you obviously know something that you're not supposed to repeat.
Attaboy, John.
Okay.
All right. Jonathan Wilhite and Mike Wright were not there at the start either. Okay. They haven't been around at all for the last few weeks, so there's nothing surprising there. Myron Pryor did come back. He's been out with a back injury. On and off for a while. So that was good news.
All right.
They did a walkthrough, not too surprising because it's only 36 or so hours removed from the end of the game.
Right.
But they did so inside the bubble, despite the fact that they're going to be playing outside in cold, similar conditions to what they have here, a lot colder actually. But I think it was more, and we sort of discussed this on PFW earlier, more because Wednesdays are installation days. Mm-hmm. And it's more important that everybody's on the same page, knows what's going on. When you're outside in the elements trying to install stuff, there's a little bit more potential for a lapse in concentration because of the conditions or whatnot. So I think just the smartest thing was to just keep it indoors. Everyone's operating under the same comfortable enough conditions, and you can get the game plan in. Then the mm-hmm. next 2 days, I think they'll be outside getting used to the physical part and the elements of it. Because forecast, John, we got a little note from the Bears telling us that wind chill could make game time temperatures down in the minus 40 area.
We're talking
so
ice bowl,
dress
baby.
Appropriately.
Oh, my goodness. Are you serious?
They sent us an email. Yeah, it's been circulating. Let me just pull it up here real quick.
That's not going to help the passing game too much, is it?
Because I can do that now on my fancy little BlackBerry that we have. Forecast for Sunday. This is from the Bears. Forecast for Sunday. Cold is an understatement. Aside from snow, we could experience wind chills of 40 below zero.
Don't be jealous that I've been chatting online with babes all day.
Yeah. So.
Wow.
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure, and it's been a little bit colder than normal around here of late, too, but
sure
not that
been.
Cold.
No.
So I would expect them to be outside the next couple of days to get used to what they're going to have on Sunday.
That's gnarly.
Now, the other footnote to Copen not being there, reportedly, according to some tweets that I saw, the Patriots worked out Veterans Center Jake Grove.
Mm-hmm.
You may remember second round pick by the Raiders, was mm-hmm. there for several years, then went to mm-hmm. Miami last mm-hmm. year with a free agent
right.
deal, and I guess didn't make the team this year. I thought
he was one of the last cuts, I think, and hadn't.
Yeah.
I don't think he's landed with anybody.
I was surprised to see the name.
Yeah.
Make of that what you will. Maybe that was just to keep the emergency list ready, handy, whatever. They are known to do that, but. Something to keep an eye on this week.
Well, I have to admit, if by some chance there's an injury to Copen that takes him out of the equation, it's a little bit of a blow. I don't think people realize the kind of relationship that and confidence that Brady has in a guy like Copen in front of him. And while I think that Tom Brady certainly, if anybody's capable of adjusting, he would be. That's still a little bit of a blow, and that does put a little bit of a dent in your versatility.
Yeah. It does. Not anything that they can't overcome, I don't think. Given their history in that regard,
mm-hmm.
and given their position coach, who's a master at that kind of thing. But yeah, it does have an effect, especially Copen's the guy that calls the signals. you know, for the rest of the line. And he's obviously, you know, the guy Tom Brady's most familiar with as far as the exchange. It's not insurmountable, but it is an issue. It's why, you know, we're going to have to keep an eye on it this week.
All right, nitpick from Sean says, great show. If I have to nitpick anything from Monday night's game, it's Bill Belichick leaving Brady in the game during the fourth quarter. I don't mind the Pats scoring a ton of points against the Jets, but not at the expense of Brady's health. Also, I think the Pats dodged a couple of bullets with a couple of miscues between Holmes and Sanchez, as Butler was clearly beaten on those plays.
It's so ridiculous.
What do you think?
Well, Butler's a tough case because he's underperformed all year, mm-hmm. you know, and that's kind of what I've come to expect from him is what I saw the other night, unfortunately. But, yeah, if you want to nitpick, I mean, sure, he hasn't shown the sort of development that we'd hoped in the second year. He showed a lot of promise last year. I mean, that's a legitimate one. I'll take that one.
Okay. Kevin in Maryland, John and Eric, I understand you're more focused on the wonderful black eye we gave the Jets. However, just curious if you think Brandon Tate is going to start showing up more in the last four games as a way of not risking Welker and Branch before the playoffs.
No, I don't.
And if you agree that Tate will be more active, do you think it will hurt us for winning these games? Well, you already didn't agree.
No, I don't agree. I don't think Bill approaches it that way. I don't think
I don't
Bill
either.
Approaches games that way. He approaches every game as a must win, and
right.
whatever they have to do to win, that's what they'll do. He's not like the Colts, who like to rest all their players once they've sewn up a division,
right.
which they're not going to do this year, obviously. But and that's the approach I would take too. I don't like the whole resting kind of thing. I mean, unless you have a bye week, you got to win a football game.
Right. Gustavo, our friend in Brazil, says, John, how are you? I was thinking only for this week instead of a nitpick. How about an overreaction day? And here's my overreactions. Patriots secondary, most dangerous in the league, 8 picks in the last 3 games. Number 2, the undrafted running backs are the most reliable duo in the NFL. Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis never fumbled a ball in his career. Woodhead has made us not miss Kevin Faulk at all. And he says, number 3, finally, although this is not exactly an overreaction, Tom Brady is the quarterback that gets the best from his wide receivers and tight ends. Did you see how fired up he was?
Mm-hmm.
Advising Hernandez throughout the game and at the second half acknowledging the tight end's accomplishments. I have not been so proud to be a Patriots fan since 07.
Yeah, Brady's had an unbelievable streak of games the last few weeks.
Yeah.
You know, almost more impressive than anything else he's ever done, just because of the way the season has unfolded and, you know, the whole restructuring of the offense and the circumstances of the games, the opponents, the ramifications. I mean, it's very impressive what he's been doing this year. And I don't think, and especially since I don't think he started out this season playing at his highest level. And for him, not playing at his highest level is still better than 99% of the other quarterbacks in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But just from what we're used to seeing from him, I saw a lot of underthrown balls, a lot of way over the heads of guys, because I have to chart his incompletions. That's one of the things I do for game days.
Mm-hmm.
And not only chart the incompletions as far as the number of them, but what kind of incompletions they were. So I pay particular attention to the way he throws the ball. And he just didn't seem like himself. And I don't know if that was because the receivers weren't in tune with him yet and he was expecting them to be places they weren't, or whether he was just having a... It's unclear exactly. I think, though, when I see that droopy head of his in games, that to me, it's like the Manning face. When he gets the droopy thing and he looks like he's pouting as he walks into the sidelines, that to me says he's mad at himself. Because when
yeah.
he's mad at somebody else, he's in their face yelling at them.
Yeah, that's true.
And I saw a lot of his droopy face. Droopy hanging head earlier in the season, and I just
right.
thought he's not quite there yet. But mm-hmm. he was still putting up points, and they were getting help from the defense and special team scoring and whatever. But they've turned it around, and in a hurry, John. They really have turned it around very quickly against some good competition. It's impressive what they've been doing this year.
Gustavo also says, I guess if you really have to nitpick further, I would say the two mistakes bothered me in the very first drive. Miscommunication between Brady and Ben Jarvis Green Ellis and a bad snap from Copen. That kind of miscommunication happens before, or has happened before, and in the future could be the difference between a win and a loss.
Hmm.
That's a serious
That's
nitpick.
A serious nitpick, because you hardly ever see a bad snap from Dan Copen.
No. Ever.
I mean, they are human after all.
Steve says, my nitpick is the analysis by many sports broadcasters leading up to the game. I predicted a blowout and most shrugged it off or didn't think it was feasible. Perhaps now the Pats are a real contender in the eyes of stat watchers. And then he says, I'll add that I believe the Jets were frauds before the game, hence the blowout prediction. I didn't think they were as good as everybody assumed, and I'll stick to my prediction that this is the beginning of the end. Well, I got to admit, I think even more surprising to me, the Patriots, you know, margin of victory is the fact that the Jets allowed it to get that way. They looked as unprepared as I think I've ever seen almost for a team in a big game situation.
Yeah, and they looked like they had no fight in them once the
I mean, it was kind of like, you know, the Patriots knew everything that was coming at them.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, they did.
Yeah.
And so when Sexy Rexy said yesterday, you know, we were outplayed, outcoached, outbought, you know, I said, dang right you were outcoached. Oh, my God. That was the most thing that I think that was the thing that was most evident of all. The Patriots had an answer for everything you did.
By far their most complete performance in years.
There's no question.
Years. Their most complete performance, all three phases, in years.
It was a yikes.
Yeah, because even the I'm not even taking into consideration the 59-0 Tennessee last year, because that was a horrible opponent on a day when they gave up, but it was also like, we didn't expect the snow in mid-October.
Right,
that was one thing that led to it, and any team probably would have put 59 on the Titans
that day. Any good team,
yeah,
certainly.
Right,
no question.
This was a much more impressive performance because of the opponent. And the way they just, you're right, we were totally prepared for everything the Jets did.
Steven says, my nitpick is we didn't run the score up enough in the fourth quarter. Now, that one I like.
Yeah.
I'm always one of those people that just, I think
the mark of a good team
is a team that has the ability to squeeze and squeze hard on the other team's jugular and keep them down when you've got them down.
Killer instinct. You got to have it.
Killer instinct.
Got to have it.
That's why.
That's what they lacked last year. They couldn't finish teams off.
Absolutely. And that's why when people say, oh, why are they still passing the ball in the fourth quarter? Oh, the game is over. What are they doing? Oh, this is going to come back and haunt them. I'm like, you know, that's crap. That's absolute crap.
Well, I can see that argument, John, though, because there was a point when with 4 minutes to go or whatever it was, Brady was still out there. I'm thinking, why isn't Brian Hoyer out there at this point?
He probably should have been, and he probably should have been because it gave him a chance to, you know, get some experience or whatever, but I don't even think that we're at that stage.
I'm not worried about the experience for Hoyer. I'm worried about Brady getting cheap-shotted.
Well, that was a concern.
And the way that game was going, you wouldn't put it past a division rival to do something like
that. A Jet, you know, somebody to do
and frustration, yeah.
But you know what? The way the offensive line was playing on Monday night, you know, there's very little chance. I thought they were really going to get to him for that kind of a thing.
No, but after the play, the ball goes downfield, your blocker lets up. You never know.
That's legit. That's legit. But as far as running up the score, the guys that are in the game, they're not going to just stop trying. It's up to you as a defensive unit to stop the other guy.
Right.
Okay. Even if you're just running the football and you're running base, you know, off tackle plays or between the guard plays, I mean, you still got to stop somebody.
Yeah. And that touchdown on fourth down, was it to Branch?
Yeah.
You know, obviously your goal is to try to score on every play, but realistically, you're trying to pick up the first down there. And the Jets displayed atrocious tackling, which allowed him to get the touchdown from, what was it, like 25 yards out?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're trying to get the first down in that situation.
And they allowed him,
to score. That's not running up the score. That's terrible defense.
Keith says, mine would be, he echoes another one that's already been said this way. He says, my nitpick would be leaving Brady in throughout the game. A, he could get injured when the game was out of the Jets' reach. B, Hoyer needs game experience he can get in case A happens.
Mm.
I don't know if it's so much game experience, because I think, you know, obviously the Patriots really thought that Brian Hoyer would not be capable. I think we'd see a third quarterback in there, to be honest with you. But they haven't done that, and they haven't done that now for 2 years.
Yeah, going on 2 years, yeah.
Right. So in that regard, I think they feel like, you know, if, you know, knock on wood here, that the unthinkable happens, I think they feel like, you know, based on the system they now have in place, that Brian can come in and operate it.
Yeah, it won't be nearly as effective as it's been.
No, it still won't be Tom Brady. But, I mean, at the same time, I think they feel like they could still be competitive. But they don't think like that. Nobody ever thinks like that. All they do is, all right, you know, can Brian do the job? Well, yes, Brian can do the job. Will we have to coach him up? Yeah, we'll have to coach him up. But at the same time, it's who knows? Could they have made that decision? Yes. Should they have? Well, you know, in hindsight, it's hard to say because, frankly, I mean, he got through unscathed. Doesn't mean it's going to happen the next time they run something up on somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's always the double edge to the sword. When you stab it in so deep that the other team has no chance to even recoil at all, and that's what the Patriots did on Monday night. When you're pulling that sword out, you have a chance to cut yourself.
Yeah,
and that's really what the analogy is all about here. You got to be careful with that. If you're going to leave your weapons in there, be careful you don't damage yourself.
Yeah.
That's what
self-inflicted wounds.
Self-inflicted wounds would certainly be difficult to deal with at this stage of the game. Frederick says, my nitpick of the day would have to be, well, I got nothing to add. I did, however, love the shot of Bill Belichick smiling discreetly when Sanchez and Holmes couldn't connect on their last fourth down attempt. Furthermore, it must be killing Rex Ryan that he's getting nothing in return from Belichick or Brady, not even cocky comments after the slaughter. I love the Patriots' way. When winning, say little. When losing, say less.
Mm-hmm.
That actually is, you know, a pretty good line.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, and Brady came up with that on Patriots Monday, didn't he?
He might have.
Yeah, I thought that was the one that it was.
Might have been.
Well,
yeah.
You know, when you win, you say little, mm-hmm. and when you lose, you say even less.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's pretty good. Seems to be the Patriot way of doing things for the most part. All right, let's see.
Wait, wasn't it the other way around? When you're losing, say little.
It?
When you're winning, say less.
Is that what it was?
I think it might have been.
When you're losing, say little. When you're winning, say less.
Yeah, because the winning speaks for itself, I guess.
Right. Well, that certainly makes more sense to me, anyway. I don't know.
Maybe
I'll
I'm
have
wrong.
To go back
I,
and check
I, it. I didn't really pay too much attention to
but
it.
But it's a good one anyway. I like
sure.
it. All right, here we go.
Wrong. Try again, dumbass.
Thank you. Thank you. Dear John, I love your show, especially your producer. He's the most talented and handsome guy to grace the airwaves
of
Patriots Waito in quite some time.
Oh, God. Which producer are you talking about? Is there, two of them are in the booth right now.
Thanks, Kevin.
That was Doc.
Oh, that was Doc.
Who's commandeered the board from Kevin for some reason. Claims he's in there doing work.
He says, anyways, though, the Patriots gave up 152 yards on 31 carries to the Jets, most of which was when the game still mattered. They need to tighten it up before Sunday. That actually is a good point.
Hmm.
If you want to nitpick, run defense would
from
have to
Kevin
be a
in the booth.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Kevin's right, actually. What, have you got him chained in there? His ball and chain to a typewriter?
He's not working, that's for sure. He's sending emails into the show.
Wow. Dang. Doc, you got to lighten up on him. Let the boy come up for air sometime, you know? But it is
scrambling to find a sound bite here.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Drop him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There you go. Crack the whip. What do you think about the run game?
Yeah, that's a legitimate one. Kevin was, when I was in the booth earlier, Kevin was trying to stress that to me.
So that's why you sent it to me.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So, it's a legitimate concern, though. Yeah, the Jets were able to run the ball somewhat effectively, run over defenders in some cases, which is troubling. Matt Forte is a good running back. So, it's a concern, but that's one of the concerns they've had all year is giving up big plays both in the running and passing game. But they're not breaking most of the time.
Right.
They're allowing big plays, but somehow coming up with a decisive stop when it counts. Not always. I mean, there's been games when they've allowed, you know, like the Indy game's a perfect example. They allowed them to claw back into it and drive, but they made the play when they needed to.
Right. Chris in Seattle. Nitpicks? I'll pass. They look like the best team to me. Definitely the best in the AFC. I believe they're better than all the NFC teams, too, but I still need to see them against Chicago and Green Bay, and the Eagles do offer a fear factor.
Mm-hmm.
I love what you guys are saying about the post-Moss receivers. I agree that all those scrappy receivers running such superb routes is overwhelming for any secondary. Problem with Revis Island is that it can only contain one player at a time. That's very true. I will say, though, that I heard Brady say when asked about getting in Aaron Hernandez's grill to congratulate him after his touchdown that he was happy that when Hernandez's number was called, he made a big play.
Mm-hmm.
I only bring this up to contrast against Eric's point. The Pats offense no longer calls a number one receiver on a given play.
No. Yeah, and for the most part, they don't. And Tom Brady will tell you that. Bill O'Brien will tell you that. Bill Belichick will tell you that. And I know that because all three of them have told me that. and told all of us in the media that. That's how their offense works. There are very, very few plays, as I said before, where there is a primary receiver. There may have been on that particular play.
Because but on
I believe
a particular
that was,
play, though, if
that particular
a,
play, that he's talking about the Hernandez touchdown?
Oh, you're right. Yes, he
that
is.
That was a play-action pass where Hernandez was the only receiver who was on the bootleg side of the play there, and it was designed specifically for him. So that was one of the rare instances where there probably was a primary receiver because there were no other receivers out there.
Okay. So I guess then what they do then is they have, when they're running a particular route, if there's no primary receiver, how does Brady define his first look?
It starts pre-snap.
Okay.
You look and see if it's, first of all, if it's man coverage or zone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's dictated by, you know, certain looks that they have. If you send a guy in motion and there's a defender trailing that that player, it's man
right.
coverage.
Okay.
For the most part, you know, there's, you know, the zone blitz schemes where that is faked. But
sure.
For the most part, that's the indication.
Mm-hmm.
Then you look for the mic. You look for
middle linebacker.
Yeah, the middle linebacker, where he's positioned. Certain things will key whether or not there's going to be a blitz or not. That will dictate who the receiver is going to be. And then once the ball is snapped, you know, a lot of times the look is different from what you actually get once the ball snapped. Then Brady has to make a read. Is his pre-snap read the same as his post-snap read? And if that's the case, then there are all different factors as to who's going to get the ball. And even if he looks for that first guy that he thinks is supposed to be open and he's not, then he has to check down and look to number two, number three,
okay.
four, whatever. So that's how it works. It's all based on how the defense reacts to their formation.
Gotcha. This one comes from Todd in Newfoundland, who says, "Hey, Pete." That's the next show. Love the show and the points of view. I'm emailing you from Newfoundland. Not many things to nitpick with a 45-3 trouncing of the hated Jets. My nit today is our special teams and our ability to cover downfield, kickoff, and punts. I thought Brad Smith was one of the bright spots for the Jets on Monday night. I feel this is a lingering problem that gives our opponent good starting field position
yep.
for most games.
Yep.
What's your opinion? Do you feel it'll hurt us down the stretch, especially next week with Hester? Yeah, we touched on this just a little while ago.
Yeah, it does.
But
it's a concern.
It is a concern, and it is something that obviously they have to tend to in practice this week, especially with a guy like Hester who's returning kicks for the Bears.
Yeah, and they started off today's workout like they do on a Friday, which was with kickoff returns. That doesn't really help. You know, they have a scout team, kickoff team.
Right.
But something tells me they're working on the kickoff coverage too, because that was definitely an Achilles heel and – if you can call it that, Monday night.
John and Eric, my nitpick has to be the poor play from Matt Light. I know he's a great lineman, but it seems to me a lot of the pressure on Brady came from a missed block from Light. I saw one, and this is from Kevin, by the way.
Well,
He was sacked three times. And the only one that I know, one of them did come from Light's way that I saw he whiffed.
Mm.
But I don't know.
I'm trying to remember the others. There were two back-to-back, actually, weren't there?
Yes, there were two back-to-back.
The Patriots had the ball in Jets
yes.
territory.
And one of them was when Light whiffed.
One of them was when Light whiffed. The second one, I'm trying to remember how the play unfolded. But for the most part, they handled handled that pressure, that O-line
and the backs handled the pressure. That's a real nitpick, but I really don't have any. Even with the sacks, I thought the line was spectacular mm-hmm. most of the night. Because Brady's time, I mean, he had 2.5 to 3 seconds to throw.
Right,
I mean,
and
that's
ESPN was showing the...
They did the clock, and he had, oh man. How great was that to see, though, when they
yeah.
were doing that? I mean, I thought that was well done by the Monday night crew.
Right.
Howard in Connecticut, John and Eric, first and foremost, great game, great win.
Mm-hmm.
That said, my nitpicks are... Already covered, but an issue, kickoffs and coverage.
Yep.
Run D, Jets moved the yep. ball too easily even before the game got out of hand.
Mm-hmm.
Need to shut down the running game.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, pressure on the quarterback. They are getting some, not enough.
Not nearly enough.
Not consistently enough.
That's correct. Exactly right.
Number four, coverage on wide receivers. If not for Sanchez choking, there were a number of wide receivers open that need tighter coverage. He just didn't get them the ball.
Yep.
And number five, Matt Light missing blocks and a couple of the sacks on Brady. So we covered that one as well. The one that I think is interesting is the coverage on the wide receivers. That actually is true. Sanchez, I don't know if it was because of the cold weather, who knows, But he did miss badly on a couple of those throws where the receivers were open.
Sure did.
Our DBs were playing soft on.
Yep. Sure did.
That could be, that's a legitimate nitpick, and that's a nitpick that I've had, as you well know, all season long. That, frankly, while it's gotten better, especially when it comes to, you know, Devin McCourty and even Kyle Arrington, for that matter,
yep.
I think he's improved tremendously this year. They still, by and large, are too soft.
Yeah. Yeah, they give up big plays.
They do.
They give up big plays.
And they could have given up big plays the other night had, you know, Sanchez just not been horrible.
But
and
he was horrible. They make up for that with, you know, McCourty had a great interception. I mean, the way he read that pass was brilliant. I mean, he had just enough of his hand on, was it Edwards, I think? Was it the intended receiver?
Braylon Edwards.
On that deep pass.
Yes.
Just enough to know where he was so that he didn't outrun the coverage.
Right.
Outrun the pass
and was able to make
an adjustment to be the only player who could get the ball in that situation.
Well played.
Yeah, so he's that's the kind of thing. Yeah, they're giving up certain, you know, yardage wise, but they're making those kind of plays when they need to.
Mm-hmm. Jack says, "I'm sick of these people complaining we ran up the score. Do we have to have this discussion?"
Who's
again?
Saying that?
More to the point, the big mouth Jets and their parade float of a coach who never seemed to shut up phrases like kick his ass and no rookie can cover me and the list goes on seems long forgotten after we dismantle the team. Suddenly we're supposed to feel bad for the best defense in the league? Excuse me, not a chance. My real nitpick is that we didn't keep scoring.
Mm. Fair enough. I really don't have a problem with what Rex said after the game.
I would want
my coach to still try to be confident. And, you know, use that as motivation. What else are you going to do? You're going to sit there and cry about it? Use it as motivation.
Yeah. Mary Beth says, John, I just wanted to say hello from snowy Syracuse. My nitpick would be the yards allowed by special teams on returns.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and she says, I so love living in New York this week. A lot of Jets fans, I would guess, that probably aren't loving life too much this week.
No.
Well, that's gonna kind of wrap up our abbreviated version of the show today, again, because I've got a basketball assignment today. I know that's hardly an excuse, but, you know, hey, facts is facts. I'm not sure what to tell you. Are you back in tomorrow?
Yeah.
Okay, good. We're going to definitely take the time to jump into more on the Bears.
In studio?
In studio. Be there tomorrow. Obviously, yeah. What's that? What did you say, Jace? Oh, Shop Talk is going to come up next. Excellent. All right. And then, of course, Russell Baxter will be in with us tomorrow to go over the week around the NFL and also look back, because Russell was the only one, by the way, last week that picked the Jets to win the game.
Oh.
He's the only one. So we'll have a nitpick with him.
Yeah. You have a bone to pick with him.
Yeah, big bone to pick with him. Same patch time, same patch channel, 2 p.m. Thursday here on Patriots.com Radio.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
We're pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines, Patriots.com. Radio.